Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic at 7 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And of course, the 9 o'clock hour means it is time to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment, as we do each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Think you're ready for the third toughest course on the PGA Tour? Take one of golf's ultimate tests at PGA National Resort and Spa. Visit PGAResort.com. And Patrick, 16.5 to 11.5, the record books will show, was the final margin of victory for the Americans last weekend in Kentucky at Valhalla, and they snapped the string of three consecutive European wins in 02, 04, and 06, and for the first time since 1999, last century, the Americans are the victorious Ryder Cup team, and it's been 27 years, since the Americans won by a margin equal to or greater than that of the 5 points that they did last weekend in Kentucky. So we know, obviously, the Americans and Paul Isinger, they were the winners. The Europeans and Nick Faldo, they were the losers. But let's go a little deeper. Let's talk about some of the biggest winners and some of the biggest winners from last weekend.
Okay, let's go winners. I'm going with three on the U.S. team and one on the Europe team. On the U.S. team, I'm going Boo Weekly, Anthony Kim, and Kenny Perry. I'll give you my quick rationale. Boo Weekly, you know, with the booing and everything else, which got a little annoying to me, but still, I think he was really the tone setter in a way with that chant. That sort of became the overriding theme, if you will, of this Ryder Cup. And I think, you know, the other players hearing that as they were going around the course or whatever, I think that gave them a little bit of a jolt every time they heard that, because the crowd was only booing when good stuff was happening for Boo. So, and that happened a lot with him as he went 2-0-1 and really just gave an emotional charge, I think, to the team. Anthony Kim, best player, even though he went 2-1-1, I think he was the best player on the team. And specifically with that pasting that he gave Sergio to start out the Sunday singles and kind of set the tone there, I think was the biggest performance by one of the guys in terms of just getting them on the path to, you know, on the, especially on Sunday, that, hey, we are not going to lose this thing. And Kenny Perry, you know, you would have criticized him, and rightly so, for skipping the majors and focusing so intently on this event. If he either didn't play well or the U.S. lost, they did not do either. He played well and the U.S. won. So I got to give Kenny Perry credit for what he did, even though I still, in a way, disagree with it, because I think the emotion of this Ryder Cup will fade. But if he would have done well in the British Open or the PGA, that would have been with him. This will be with him forever, but that would have been an individual highlight that, you know, you can never get back. So I do give him credit for the way he performed in this Ryder Cup and performed during the year to get to the Ryder Cup. Ian Poulter, obvious choice for the Europeans, you know, just played unbelievably as a captain's pick with a lot of pressure on him in that role, and came through really well and did his best to almost single-handedly get the Euros, the Ryder Cup. Valhalla was a winner. I think the course played excellently for this type of event. Lots of birdies, lots of, unlike, you know, the regular tour events, Russ, where I lambaste them for being 27 under or whatever, which I can't stand that. In this case, you want that. You want birdies to have to win holes, and that creates excitement. And I think the setup and the course played beautifully for that and lended itself to a lot of excitement. Excuse me. Last thing, this was huge for the Ryder Cup, the U.S. winning. They've got to win again, I think, in 2010 in Wales to really get sort of back to an even keel with the Euros and prove this wasn't like a 99 fluke, even though the margin of victory is big. It's important for the Ryder Cup to have some kind of a competitiveness to it, and that hasn't been there at four of the last five because the Euros have been so down, specifically the last two. So while this was a great first step in terms of getting that competitive balance back, I think the U.S. needs to win again in 2010 to really get the fever back that, hey, anybody can win this thing. So those would be my four players, course, and then the Ryder Cup as a whole.
So good stuff there. I'm going to probably echo a lot of your sentiments when it comes to winners. Valhalla, definitely a winner. So therefore, architect Jack Nicklaus a winner as well, because that's one of his courses, and PGA of America winner for as setup. Well for setup as well, and that's one of their properties. You know, they own a couple of properties around the country. Valhalla is one of them. Coyote Springs in Vegas is another, and of course the PGA Golf Club and Village up there in Port St. Lucie with the three great courses is their third property. So PGA of America, big time winner for the property that they own, for the setup of that property, and for the entire week of festivities. As far as players go, going to echo a lot of your sentiments on both sides. The rookies, the American rookies, were huge winners. Four of the top seven players. There were seven players on the American team that won 2.5 points or more for the U.S. last weekend. Four of those seven were rookies. Boo Weekly, Anthony Kim, Hunter Mahan, and J.B. Holmes. And two of those four rookies were captain's picks, and Hunter Mahan and J.B. Holmes. So the rookies were big winners. Obviously, Paul Azinger. We know Paul Azinger is the biggest winner of all for this entire weekend, but for a number of reasons. Primarily, his captain's picks. Look at them. Hunter Mahan won 3.5 points. He was the biggest points getter on the American team. J.B. Holmes, 2.5 points. Chad Campbell even won 2 points. Three of his four captain's picks were, you know, three of the eight best players on the team. But, you know, and Chad Campbell, being the eighth best, the only guy on the American team to win exactly 2 points, except for Phil Mickelson, but he's one of my losers. I'll get to him in a second. So the American rookies, big time winners, obviously. Kenny Perry, Justin Leonard, and Jim Furyk, the three veterans that really stepped up. Although, for, you know, I think my theme for the American team, unfortunately, is that the veterans were one of my losers. We'll get to them in a second. But not Kenny Perry and not Justin Leonard, who's joining us in about 10 minutes from now, by the way, and not Jim Furyk. All three of those guys had phenomenal Ryder Cups. Kudos to them. On the European side, I got a couple of winners, believe it or not, even though they lost by 5 points. Ian Poulter, echo your sentiments, Pat. He was the best player. I think he was the best player on either side. He was the only player to win 4 points among the 24 players in the Ryder Cup. And he was the one guy on the European team who seemed to have that kind of, I mean, his eyes, when he gets intense, his eyes are kind of scary looking. I almost think that Ian Poulter was the Anthony Kim for the Europeans. It's too bad that the other European players didn't really take his lead like the Americans took Anthony Kim's lead. And to another, you know, extent, Boo Weekly, for different reasons. Anthony Kim was really the guy that was intense and really did it mostly through his play. Boo Weekly did it through his play as well, but he was the kind of goofy guy that kept it, you know, really lighthearted, and that's what the Americans need. And I'll say Justin Rose was a winner as well. He won 3 points, and he was teamed with Ian Poulter in a couple of those pairings on the weekend. I think both of those Englishmen really played well, and I think that's a harbinger for their play in years to come. I really think Poulter and Rose are going to break through for major victories, and maybe part of it being they're a good experience in the Ryder Cup.
I can't say I disagree with that. A lot of guys use this as a springboard. Real quick, my losers, Westwood, Garcia, Harrington, that's obvious. And then I would also, I'm not going to say Faldo's a loser in terms of, you know, what he did. The only thing I will give him some criticism for is the setup on Sunday. He should have started with Ian Poulter. Man, how would you like to have seen Poulter versus Kim in that first match? And then, hey, you got to get off to a good start being behind. And that's the only criticism I really have of Faldo. And it's a big one because I think backloading it was a mistake.
I don't buy into all the criticism that Nick Faldo is getting. Actually, I'm going to say one of my losers is the European press for how they've dealt with this loss.
I mean,
it's almost like they expected the Europeans would win every single Ryder Cup. What good is that? I mean, you're going to lose every now and then, and the Europeans are acting like this is the end of the world. You lost by 5 points. You just won the last three Ryder Cups.
Big.
You won
two
the
of them.
Last two by 9 points. You're going to lose every now and then. If you win every single one, like you said, Pat, there's not going to be any Ryder Cup. There's got to be some interest, and there's got to be some, you know, it can't be the hammer and the nail. It's got to be push and shove. It's got to be some reciprocity back and forth. It was a good thing the Americans won this Ryder Cup. The European press is not getting that, and their lambasting of Nick Faldo, I think, is unwarranted. I agree. The only thing you can question Faldo for, perhaps, is the way he situated 1 through 12 in the singles matches on Sunday. Although I will say this, Sergio Garcia has been their best player, and he put him first, even though he wasn't having a good week. Historically, he is the Europeans' best player. I don't know that I have a problem with Sergio going first. And all the European fans are saying, well, what about Westwood, Garcia, and Westwood and Harrington going 11 and 12? Well, those guys stunk this week. If you had put them first, they probably still would have lost. If they were going first and second or second and third after Sergio, doesn't matter. Those are my big three losers, player-wise. Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, and Padraig Harrington on the European team. How about this? Padraig Harrington for the week went 0-3-1. He's the only player on either side that lost three times, and he only had the one half. He only got a half a point. His last three Ryder Cups, Padraig Harrington, and this is so out of character for the way his season has been going. Padraig Harrington, last three Ryder Cups, his cumulative record is 0-10-3. And that is unbelievable. So those are my losers. I don't think that Nick Faldo is necessarily a loser. I think the European press is for the way they've really been trashing him. And then I got to say losers for the Americans are really a lot of those veterans. Even though Kenny Perry and Justin Leonard and Jim Furyk came up big, Stuart Sink and Phil Mickelson came up small. And going in, I think those were the two guys that everyone was saying were going to be the leaders, Stuart Sink and Phil Mickelson, Mickelson especially. And they just did not – I mean, who – Pat, when, you know, going into the Ryder Cup, would you have thought of the 12 American players on the team that the two worst players would have been Mickelson and Stuart Sink?
Phil Mickelson, after his first one, I think in 95 where he went like 3-0-0, he just has not he just hasn't embraced this or whatever. He just doesn't seem to play well in this thing. And, you know, he does hit it off the face of the earth a lot, and that doesn't lend itself well in the team things. And then by the singles, I guess he just is not interested at that point or whatever. But he doesn't seem to just get up for this. Sink, on the other hand, drives me nuts. He's supposed to be like a steady player, and he just can't seem to rise above that. And he, you know, that's why I was a little worried.
He's way too vanilla.
It is. There's like no emotion there or whatever. And that's sort of why I don't like Scott Verplank, even though he probably has a better record than Stuart Sink. He's too vanilla too. For his guy who's a steady player. Justin Leonard's a good steady player, but he's not vanilla. He gets it done.
He's fiery. He's got some fire
when he needs to. And that's what I disagree with Sink.